There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com. The Bookshelf, what you should be reading.
Every week on The Bookshelf, we do an in-depth review of one or a number of books around a certain theme or topic. And what is a month of celebration without food? We are going to talk today to food and travel blogger Sally Prosser of My Custard Pie fame, who is reviewing two books for us, Scandinavian Comfort Food. She's also going to be talking about... That's by festival author Trina Hahnemann, by the way. She's also going to be talking about recipes inspired by literature, courtesy of Kate Young, author of The Little Library Cookbook, who also has a resource online called The Little Library Cafe. Welcome to the new studio, Sally Prosser. This is your first time.
It is. And apologies for my very in-my-boots voice. I woke up this morning croaky.
I always feel like husky works well on the radio, so you're totally fine. So from the home to Hygge, Harry Potter and beyond, we're going to be asking today what makes good comfort food. I'd like to start by introducing Kate Young to you all, if you're listening. Have a listen to her talking about her inspiration for these recipes inspired by literature.
My name's Kate Young and I'm the author of The Little Library Cookbook. I was feeling anxious and lonely and a bit... I really love London and I've loved living here for years and I've wanted to live here since I was a child, but I had... an incredible sense of homesickness, and I wanted to take myself back to being 10 years old again. So I thought if I could make something that felt comforting then, which is, it was treacle tart from Harry Potter, I thought I could take myself back to being 10 years old if I made this treacle tart again that I had dreamed about but never eaten as a child. It's literally just a memory from a book. And I made it, and I invited friends for dinner, and they were like, you should write about that. That's a nice thing to write about. For me, both books and food are really rooted in emotion. I have a really good memory for books that I've read at certain points in my life, what they meant to me at that point in my life. I reread books a lot because of the emotion that they gave me the first time and looking at how that's different 10 years later. And food does the same thing. I remember where I was when I first ate a specific meal that I really love. I remember my mum's cooking really well. I remember my dad's cooking really well. I remember all the cooking that I did when I first moved to London and lived in a flat. It's all rooted in quite specific, tangible emotion. And so I think that what I wanted to write was a book that reflected that.
Kate Young there talking about her inspiration for The Little Library Cookbook and also The Little Library Cafe, which is her index of recipes inspired by literature that you can find out more about online. What did you think about this idea, recipes inspired by literature?
I really loved it because I think you have comfort reads as well as comfort food, and often they're interlinked. So some highlights from me. I've read Rebecca, countless times by Daphne du Maurier. And the food is very much part of this other world that the character goes into. And she cooks crumpets from this, which are really comforting. She's just dripping from the book. It's dripping crumpets. And you get that idea of the butter oozing through the holes and that, you know, huddling in front of a fire. So the two go brilliantly together.
We were talking off air about the fact that it's perfect for a book club if you want to create more of an atmosphere as well.
Yeah, I've been in a book club for 16 years, and the person who chooses the book hosts the discussion and tries, if possible, not always possible, to theme the food to the book. So again, from her recipes, Kate Young's, she has To the Lighthouse by Virginia Woolf, and they're central to the story. She says, squeaking. Central to the story is this beef en daube. And it's it runs through the narrative. And the lady who hosted the discussion then, Mary, was a vegetarian, but she still cooked this enormous casserole of beef.
Because it was so central to the story.
Because it was so central. It was brilliant, yeah.
I would say it is the perfect gift. The Little Library Cookbook is the perfect gift to buy somebody who enjoys food, who enjoys books, who enjoys the idea of comfort food. It's also the perfect resource to buy for yourself this time of year if you like making homemade gifts. I know someone whose favorite book of all time is 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and there's a recipe for the alfajores that feature in the book, and that's just kind of such a perfect, thoughtful thing to make for somebody if they like the book, and if you leave like a little quote attached to the parcel from from the book that references those alfajores or that particular meal. The way it's set up online and also in the book is she starts with a quote, doesn't she, from the story, the excerpt of the book that refers to the meal in question. And then she talks about her own personal connection to it. And there's always a really lovely story that she has between the food that she's about to cook and also the literature. One of my favourites was actually the chocolatl. So it was basically a form of hot chocolate that was inspired by Northern Lights. So it begins with the excerpt from the book by Philip Pullman. "Hello," says the beautiful lady. "What's your name?" "Tony." "Where do you live, Tony?" "Clarice Walk." "What's in that pie?" "Beefsteak." "Do you like chocolatl?" "Yeah, as it happens, I've got more chocolatl than I can drink myself. Will you come and help me drink it?" Now, it's part of a very sinister section of the book, but it's something that crops up quite a lot in Northern Lights. And she says, "I was recently having dinner with a friend when I happened to mention that hot chocolate always makes me think of Mrs. Coulter from the stories. She looked at me blankly and I realised with a jolt that she hadn't yet read the books. She had them all ahead of her. I was instantly jealous." I think we've all felt that way. "As we wandered back to my flat for a cup of tea, I launched into an impassioned introduction. The Gyptians, Yorick, the Mulefa, Damons and Will. By the time we reached my front door, I was dreaming about making the perfect hot chocolate, one that was dark, rich, sweet and heavily spiced. I spent the next week playing around with recipes, enjoying the warmth that the thimblefuls of differently spiced hot chocolate provided. The recipe below is a new favourite, the perfect weapon for Mrs. Coulter, or if you have slightly less sinister plans, dessert for you and a friend." And the whole book reads this way.
Oh, how amazing. I mean, I think it is an absolute wonderful gift book. As you said, you could choose a recipe and you could either cook something and deliver it along with the book, or at least a promise, you know, with the book that I promise to cook this meal for you.
That's true.
All sorts of things. I mean, it is the website, thelittlelibrarycafe.com, is brilliant for sort of understanding what Kate Young does. And Kate's going to be with us next March.
Yes, she
at
will.
The festival.
It also made me think of you, this, because because she does different things. So sometimes she's given a real gift with the story and the meal is described pretty well. And other times, like in the case of chocolatl, she has to work from this feeling of comfort backwards to get to a recipe. And I just thought that must be interesting to read from somebody who is so involved with food and with cooking.
It's true. And actually, you mentioning a fictional villain, a female villain, and a recipe. She has Turkish Delight, of course,
yeah.
From The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. And actually, even thinking about those two things together, I'm suddenly in that cold and then the warming Turkish Delight. That would be a great present, wouldn't it? Turkish Delight and that book, the series maybe.
Rose scented.
Rose scented.
I've actually
delight.
Done that before.
Have you?
Yeah.
Gosh,
you're
a great friend. Wow.
Yes. No, I think the idea of food and literature, because so much of, I suppose, setting a scene and creating the atmosphere, you can't take food out of it.
No.
You know, there has to be that element of what they're doing in addition to the story itself, that, you know, they do eat, they do enjoy meals together or have solitary meals, and particular foods will be part of it depending where the book's set.
Yeah, like, I mean, in Harry Potter, and again, Kate cooks quite a few things from Harry Potter, but it's so central to Harry's belonging, isn't it? So where he is under the stairs and being given, I don't know, leftovers or whatever.
Yeah, scraps.
And then when he went into this whole new world, food was such a big part of it, and celebratory as well, and beautiful comfort food and it appearing magically, you know.
Thank you for bringing up Harry Potter, because top tip for anybody who wants to kind of have a Harry Potter themed discussion or meal, she actually has a few courses, like a whole like three course meal planned for you that you can try and roll out to impress your friends. Jane Austen was something, so I looked at the recipes in isolation because I thought some of the food looked delightful, but then I found myself looking for specific titles. So I'm a big Jane Austen fan, and I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great to make something that ties into one of my favourite books? And I got to the Sense and Sensibility recipe, but she mentions that Jane Austen is a bit frustrating because she doesn't really include many references to food. She wrote for her friends, assuming quite rightly, I'm sure she says, that when she places her characters around a table, she doesn't need to describe the meal. Her readers would have known precisely what the dinner consisted of. So there's a little bit of difficulty there. And it's very interesting when she works with 18th century or 19th century novels, because there's also going to be an element of food history, what was available at the time. She brings that into the discussion sometimes as well. Comfort food, that is the subject that we're talking about today via various different books and recipes. What epitomises comfort food for you, Sally?
This, I've given a lot of thought to this, actually. I suppose growing up in England, a lot of it is quite stodgy and warm and comforting. I wouldn't put a salad particularly as comfort food. Well, with the exception of a Russian salad, but that's a story behind it. And that's the thing, isn't it? I think it's a food that gives you memories of a certain time. So earliest memories, Shrove Tuesday near, is pancakes. My mum standing at the stove, pancake after pancake, lemon and sugar. You know, it was a once a year treat. That's very comforting. My dad cooked one thing. He was Polish, and he made Polish potato pancakes, which, of course, we absolutely adored, even though my mum cooked every single day. You know, Dad, you're brilliant. And again, it's coming out of the pan, hot. It's those memories. I think that's comfort food. And that's why people love the festive season, festivities, because those dishes come out every year, don't they? And they assume part of your celebrations as well. Simple things are comforting too, though. Cheese on toast, eggy bread, a lovely boiled egg with soldiers. I think these are all nursery foods, aren't they? And of course, for me, custard has to be lovely, thick, not very sweet, homemade custard.
Fitting for my custard pie.
Yes.
What about you, Isabel? What's comfort food for you?
Okay, well, I totally agree with what Sally said. It is always tied up with memories and family and customs and sort of going back in time, and I can shut my eyes and I can taste certain things. So one that is very much part of celebration here in the UAE, we've got National Day and it's an Eid thing, is the morning of any celebratory day, we eat belalid, which is sweet vermicelli. So tiny, tiny things. And then you've got caramelized onions and you've got a very thin, salty omelette that's on the top. And it's a mixture of sweet and sour. And it is a really, it's the one thing all my children, you know, for Eid celebrations or anything like that, they want lots of it. And it's because it's sweet and salty, you get that mixture together. Again, it's very comforting. On other things, I can remember that if we had unexpected guests, my mother would make two things because she always had. Her larder was always well stocked, not because of unexpected guests, but that was just the sort of person she was. So she would knock up very quickly cheese scones with mustard and hot out of the oven. And you'd cut them and you'd put butter and it would melt and they'd be absolutely delicious. And she always would do Scotch pancakes, which you can again make in a... So they're little tiny pancakes with homemade raspberry jam. And if there was cream happened to be there, we'd have them with cream too. She was a natural cook. She would make, you know, she could feed a large number. There would always be enough. If you had eggs and flour and, you know, something in the garden, homemade jams, apple pie. She always used to make, whenever I was going back to UK on holiday, she would have an apple pie because it was, and with custard as well, apple pie and custard. It's fantastic. One of those amazing sort of, I think within each family, you have family favourites. And I know that that tradition has continued with my children, that they will say, well, we want you to cook. And a lot of the food they ask me to cook is actually Emirati food. But you see, because I've been here for such a long time, I've taken Emirati food, as we all do with recipes, and you make it your own. So the way that I cook, for example, matcha bouse, or the way I do my rice with cloves and cinnamon and things like that, Each household is different. Each household has their own particular spices they use. And I think that's what becomes... Totally agree on cheese on toast, or Welsh rarebit, as my mother used to call it. It is the food that, and we used to sometimes have sliced apples underneath. So you put sliced apples and then the cheese mixture on the top, and then grill it. Again, it's the sweet and sour together that for me sort of spells comfort. Roasted chestnuts. Oh. Roasted chestnuts, which when we were children, we had an open fire and we had a chestnut roasting pan that my father would put on, and we'd eat those. And it's all these memories of the flames and the fire and the eating chestnuts together around the fire.
That seems a good point to bring up the next book that we're going to be talking about in terms of comfort food. And that's Scandinavian Comfort Food by Trina Hahnemann, Embracing the Art of Hygge. Now, she's also going to be joining us at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature next year. And we'll go through some of the recipes that I think jumped out at you, Sally. But before we do, I want to talk about the art of hygge, because you were talking about chestnuts and open fires. And that's something that in your head you definitely associate with the art of hygge. And there's a whole section on it kind of halfway or quarter of the way through the book where she explains what hygge means and what hygge means to her as well. And it's something that in my head I've always associated with the festive season. And though that is kind of the ultimate hygge time for Scandinavians, she says hygge is part of every season. Going to your beach or summer house is also all about hygge. The summer house often has a fireplace, is full of candles inside and outside. The whole interior is often about hygge. And indoor chairs and outside benches full of pillows and blankets ensure there's room for lots of hygge. Sitting outside in the long and bright Nordic evenings, lingering over dinner, talking into the early hours with friends is quintessential summer hygge. Eating outside on balconies in parks and gardens or at the beach is the Danes' favourite thing. And when I read this, I had this, because I was reading this next to, just after I'd read The Camel Book by Aditi, Treasure of the Desert. And in my head, I'd gone from the desert nights, and then I'd gone to this paragraph about hygge. And I felt really stupid because it was the first time in my head I had connected that feeling with a desert campfire. That is very hygge. And the fact that you've got exactly the same feeling that you have somewhere really cold in Scandinavia with, you know, in the middle of the desert here, I think that is hygge. It's the people, it's the memories.
Mm. It's a sense within. So whenever I go to the desert and sit... and there's silence. It's the silence. It's the sort of looking at the creation of where we live and the simplicity of it. It doesn't matter if you go into the mountains, if you go to the sea, if you go to the desert, and you're at one, you become at one with nature. And it's that huge sense of peace that you get. And I think that's what hygge is. And that's why I think our Desert Stanzas next March is such a popular event, because we lead busy lives. We talk about this, you know, social media and how it impacts on us and all the other things. And to be out there in the desert where usually and hopefully you cannot get mobile phone reception. And actually you're sitting on cushions, your feet are in the sand, and you're listening to poetry in different languages. It's magical. It is magical. And it is the best sense of hygge you'll ever get.
It's very hygge. Speaking of hygge, what was most hygge to you about the recipes in this book?
Oh, golly.
Were they recipes that you were familiar with, or?
No, I think, it made me question about someone else's comfort food. It's very personal. So I struggled with some of her comfort food sometimes. She's very much into salad, etc. And she even has a salad on her Christmas table, which that didn't ring true for me. But talking about different parts of the world, again, I'm from a background of a cold country. And sometimes it's hard to imagine that people living in very hot climates would have comfort food. But of course they do, but they're just very different ones. What's hygge for me? I mean, I agree with Isabel that it, you know, out in the desert, that Desert Stanzas is fantastic, and you're very focused. I guess walking on Dartmoor or something like that, where it's very quiet, or having a very simple picnic somewhere.
See, I had similar questions because there were quite a few salads in here. And in my head, I'm like, well, salad isn't hygge. It's not cozy. I don't associate it with a fireplace. But then I realized that to me, tabbouleh is hygge. Mm. Vine leaves are hygge. Because I have strong memories of eating those when I grew up in Jordan, because I've lived most of my life in this part of the world. And tabbouleh was hygge for me. I associate that with my childhood. Mm. That strong taste of lemon, that's something that I really associate with my childhood.
For preparation for me, I guess, is hygge as well, because I find that if I'm in the kitchen, I've got lots of time preparing the food. That gives my mind somewhere to go. I had lots of people around my table, very old friends, this weekend, and I made the most enormous pot of Moroccan meatballs in a tomato sauce. It takes an awfully long time to roll all those meatballs, but I love it because that shows to me I'm gifting something to my friends, my time. It's not a fancy dish. And then while I'm rolling, maybe I'm listening to a podcast or I'm just away thinking of things. I guess that's hygge for me.
I totally agree. Mm. My way of giving love is through food, through making food, you know, putting ingredients together, nipping out into the garden and picking either fresh ingredients. And then I have a sort of an island in the middle of the thing, and I have stools, and the grandchildren will climb up on the stools and they want to be involved in breaking eggs. We have quite a few disasters, but that's part of it. That's part of the joy that they understand about how making food. They love, I've got a salt grinder and a pepper, and they love grinding that into whatever I'm doing. And so I think it is, I've always felt preparing food is filled with love, and sharing it with family members is a great, great activity. Yeah. And hopefully, you know, they take those memories and they will create them in their own way. But it is. And you can be somewhere else because you're doing, you know, you're chopping this or mixing that together. And the idea of making meatballs or making something slightly repetitive, you can sort of be on autopilot. But you're thinking about other things at the same time and doing in the way that knitting and crocheting is. Some of my children are quite creative, and even in, you know, the younger generation, they love doing things like that. And I think, again, it's because of the sense of peace and creation that you're doing when you're making anything by hand is great.
And it definitely puts your phone out of the way if you're making all those meatballs. There's no way you can check Instagram.
It's a very good point. We've talked about comfort food from being highlighted in different ways by each of these books and these approaches, recipes from literature, the comfort of reading and the comfort of food going hand in hand there. There's a nice connection between both of these, between Scandinavian comfort food and recipes from literature. One of the recipes I found on Kate's website was for gravlax on rye from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And it starts with an excerpt from Stieg Larsson's book. Then he made himself lunch, which consisted of coffee and open sandwiches, and sat in the garden where he was typing up the notes of his conversation with Pastor Falk. When that was done, he raised his eyes to the church. And she goes on to say, more than anything else, preserving food feels like a genuine link to previous generations. I'm doing what my great-great-great-grandmother's generation would have done before refrigeration or Deliveroo or anything like that. And she says, one of my very favourite examples of old-school food preservation is gravlax, a Scandinavian method of preserving fatty fish with salt and sugar. It was originally buried underground, but is now more commonly buried under a mountain of dill. So she said that she lost count of the number of open sandwiches that this character, Mikhail Blomkvist, which I don't think I've pronounced correctly, sat down to eat when you read The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And I find it interesting that you have these wonderful comfort food recipes from books that are not comforting in the slightest. Like, it's a very uncomfortable book to read, and yet you still have this sensation of comfort from it because of the meal involved. So I find that quite interesting. And in Scandinavian comfort food, there's obviously a recipe for a very fancy version of the open sandwich.
I do love rye bread. I do love it. It is a very comforting type of bread to eat. And then gravlax. One of my family makes that. You know, it's not overly difficult to make, actually.
But again, it takes a bit of time and forethought. And that's going back to that food preparation. It's much more than just going out and buying rye bread. crisp breads and then putting some smoked salmon on top. That bit of extra preparation is the key to it, I think, why it's comforting.
And I didn't really have much experience of this. Trina says in the book that the open sandwich is it's a very Danish thing, and it's kind of the most authentic version of fast food that they have. So for Danes, an open sandwich is fast food. And if I were cooking this from this book, to me, it would be something completely new, and it would be something I would present to everyone around me. Look here what I have made. But to somebody else, you know, in Scandinavia, that's just kind of like making a regular sandwich.
Yeah. For me, out of here, she uses, I mean, here in the UAE, we can get most things, can't we? But one of the things that I absolutely adore, and it's very difficult to get here, is rhubarb. And she has something, rhubarb four ways. So I'm very envious of that. Of course, rhubarb and custard is that ultimate pairing. But it is that preserving. Coming back from the UK, often a friend of mine will give me one of her jars of homemade marmalade. And that's more precious than all sorts of things.
I totally agree.
I'm dipping into it, into the fridge, and I'm reminded of her every time. There are recipes in this book for quince jam and quince puree, though. And quinces are in season right now. So, we won't have rhubarb, but we could do something with quinces.
I can't stand quince.
Oh, really?
It's lovely with cheese. I don't know what else would you serve it with, Sally?
Oh, yeah, I think with cheese.
It's cheese. It's really it goes really well with cheese.
It was
rhubarb is one of my favorite things. But just to go out and just chop it, you know, in the morning, and then you put it into that and gooseberries.
I used to eat rhubarb raw with a bowl of sugar.
I thought it was poisonous.
Well, I don't know. I'm still alive.
You're still alive. No. I've always been told. I mean, it's one of those probably old wives' tale. Yeah. Another thing that we used to gather, and I have done it, is elderflower to make an elderflower cordial. And then, having been quite successful with that, I decided to go back and collect all the elderberries, and they grow wild on the common behind where our house is in Cambridge. And so I'd gone out quite early one Sunday morning with a pair of secateurs to decide I was going to denude all these wild trees. And anyway, as I was coming back, there was someone else who'd obviously come out to do the same thing. And I felt terrible because I thought, well, you
know. Did you share a look?
No, okay. I just quickly hurried away, and I hadn't taken all of them, but they were like.
Taken most of them.
I'd taken most of them. The ones that were near, he would have had to have gone a lot further.
I adore elderberries.
Yeah. I made them elderberry and plum jam, which was so unusual, because the elderberry, you cook it, and then you steep, you get all you put it in a thing of those jam like sieve things overnight, and you get all the elderberries, sort of the juice coming through.
It's very tart, isn't it?
It's very tart, and you mix it with plums, which are sweet. And, you know, you've got like a glut of plums, a glut of elderberries. But I could only find one recipe for what to do with elderberries. So then we made this, and it was delicious.
I want to like the quince and cheese combination, because when I lived in Argentina, it was hugely popular. Dulce de membrillo, queso, like that was a popular combination.
Yes.
And there's something to be said for not being a fan of the thing that is super popular in the country that you're living in. And you have to constantly kind of defend yourself every time it's brought up. But in a way, that is also sort of comforting, having that conversation again and again and again. In terms of comfort food for the festive season, we've talked about a lot of lovely ways in which preparing food can be comforting. You're not touching your phone, etc. But it is a very busy time of the year. And I think, in a sense, comfort food for me this time of year is sometimes food that is quick to prepare, but also satisfying. So kind of what would be your top tip for that? Quick comfort food?
Well, for me, it's just planning ahead. I mean, I start preparing my Christmas pudding about early September, actually steeping fruit and then getting it ready and maturing it.
Okay, so for the people a little late to the party. I mean, I was thinking slow cookers would be a good idea.
Yes. In fact, that's how I cook my Christmas pudding. It's the best thing ever. Instead of having that pot boiling away in your kitchen, if you've got a big slow cooker, you can do your Christmas pudding in there, which is, that's no stress. I think it's an anathema to me. Quick food at Christmas. I think that's the point. It's not about that. I think it's, as you say, having people doing bits and pieces in the kitchen.
It's very good to divide up duties and let people do the bits they like because then everyone's happy. And it shouldn't be one person who's slaving away to put everything ready for you, which, you know, I've been, I think, victim to that in some years. But not anymore. It's just happened that everyone has got a favourite bit they like to do. And I couldn't be happier, actually, to share it out.
I think just don't put yourself under too much time pressure. You can aim for when you're going to eat, but it doesn't matter if you roll over, you know, even if it's an hour late, 2 hours late.
Oh, we've had that where you know, you've sort of underestimated. And I, with the Aga particularly, I've invested in a thermometer that you stick into the sort of the between the breast and the leg. And if it reaches, I think it's 75, the chicken or the turkey is cooked. And it's so much easier because I've always been petrified of giving people, you know, particularly from things like chickens and turkeys. But with this, I now don't overcook the turkey. Yeah.
And it'll rest for ages. I mean, my turkey is out of the oven for at least an hour. Mm. It just keeps that heat. The things that you need to have hot are things like the roast potatoes, the roast parsnips, the gravy. And again, we're talking about my Christmas. Your Christmas might be different. In fact, in this book, she has something and she says that it divides people. Caramel potatoes, that's part of their Christmas. So, yeah, sticky, sweet, but savoury potatoes.
Mm. I'm not on board.
Well, I must try cooking them, not on Christmas Day, but I'm going to try them.
I think that's a really good point. Sometimes, you know, Christmas Day isn't necessarily the day where you bring out the new recipes.
No.
You want the old set list.
Yeah. My daughter's a vegan and more people around my table are vegetarian or vegan.
How do you handle that?
We have masses of different variations of things. Mm.
Okay, well, that is all that we have time for. Isabel, remind everyone the books that we were talking about, if you can.
Today?
Mm-hmm.
From 10 o'clock?
No, in the past hour. Food books.
Okay, the food books. So we've been talking about... I was thinking she's putting me on the spot here. We were talking about the Trini Hanneman book, which is her take on Scandinavian, the new Nordic, the hygge way of doing it. And remind me of the title of Trini Hanneman's book. She's going to hold it up.
Scandinavian
Comfort Food.
And it is a beautiful book.
Yeah, she has other books as well. That is one of her many books. She's lived in Copenhagen for, probably all her life, but there's nothing that she hasn't tried. So I think she's an absolute expert. And I love the way she writes it. It's quite a big book, but it has beautiful photographs in it and also sort of explanations about why they would be comfort food. And then the other one was the one that I love, the Literary Food Cafe.
Little Library Cookbook.
Yes, from Kate Young. Both of these authors will be at next year's Festival of Literature, 1st to 9th of March. And food, as we know, is very, very important in all our lives. It is a comfort food. I also think that Sally made a comment, and I think it was off air, about how important it is to think about where your food comes from, about sustainable sources, about supporting things that are grown near to home. I think it is very important. I think we should all be having herbs and tomatoes growing in our garden or on our balconies. The more we can grow ourselves, there's something lovely about just being able to pluck little things and use them in the food you're making.
And it's not truly comforting for me if I know that the world has paid a really big price for it. So in unsustainable palm oil or something like that.
Yes.
I have to be careful about where my food comes from to truly enjoy it and truly be comforted by it.
Comfort food is ethical food.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Where possible, I think we should, I think we should always have that in the back of our minds. And Daisy, who was in earlier, Daisy Lyne, has a geese and chickens and she has her own eggs and I'm very envious of that. And she was telling me about how good the goose eggs are to cook with.
Yeah. Alex has texted in to say, can't beat a good spaghetti, hear, hear. And on that note, we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much, Sally Prosser, for joining us in the studio to talk about celebration and cooking and comfort food. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.